Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. How insane is our political culture? This story manufactured controversy by the D.C. press corps yesterday, I think, speaks to the level of insanity. The obsession with racial politics and the associated phony victimology. This is the story of Ron DeSantis, who is the now Republican gubernatorial nominee in Florida, congressman, who is running against the upset darling of the media, move over Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Yeah, there's a new face of the Progressive Party, and his name is Gillum. Yeah. He's the mayor of Tallahassee. That's what I'm going to go with.
Yeah. He is the Democrat nominee for governor in Florida. Ron DeSantis is going to be a heavy favorite in that race. But this is the statement that DeSantis made after his victory on Tuesday night, speaking on Fox about it and about the upcoming general election Wednesday morning. DeSantis said this.
Florida elections are always competitive. And, this is a guy who, although he's much too liberal for Florida, I think he's got huge problems with how he's governed Tallahassee. He is an articulate spokesman for those far left views, and he's a charismatic candidate. And, I watched those Democrat debates. None of that was my cup of tea. But, he performed better than the other people there. So we've got to work hard to make sure that we continue Florida going in a good direction. Let's build off the success we've had on Governor Scott. The last thing we need to do is to monkey this up by trying to embrace a socialist agenda with huge tax increases and bankrupting the state. That is not going to work. That's not going to be good for Florida.
If you're a sane person, you might not pick up what he said that's controversial. But Gillum is black, and you heard DeSantis say, let's not monkey this up. Right. And so monkey this up.
Yeah, what exactly? Because Peyton and Eli were asking, well, what does that mean, monkey this up? And that means, in your mind, what does it mean?
It means what it's always meant. And in context, the meaning couldn't be more obvious. Monkey this up. Muck this up.
All right, muck it up.
Obviously. He's complimenting Gillum in his performance, even though he disagrees with him substantively in the first part of what you heard him say. Let's not muck this up. Monkey this up, whatever phrase you want to use to say F this up, but not say that on Fox News. That's what he's saying, obviously. The idea that anybody would take that and accuse DeSantis of a dog whistle.
Being racist, yeah.
You're a scoundrel. You're an intellectual simpleton and or a scoundrel.
Well, all of his supporters think that he was a racist term because look what happened when Roseanne Barr tweeted about Valerie Jarrett comparing her to an ape. And I argued yesterday with someone I know, but he didn't call him a monkey. He didn't say they said, let's not muck it up. Let's not monkey this up.
Whoever that person was that you were arguing with should be institutionalized.
Well, because they don't like DeSantis because he's a huge Trump supporter and President Trump likes him. I mean, remember his campaign ad?
Everyone knows my husband, Ron DeSantis, is endorsed by President Trump, but he's also an amazing dad. Ron loves playing with the kids.
Build the wall.
He reads stories.
Then Mr. Trump said, you're fired. I love that part.
He's teaching Madison to talk.
Make America great again.
People say Ron's all Trump, but he is so much more.
Big league. So good.
I just thought you should know.
Ron DeSantis for governor.
Yeah. So Gillum then was on Cavuto's show.
He was everywhere. I mean, I didn't think he had time to breathe yesterday. He was on show after show after show.
He was on Shepard Smith's show on Fox to respond to what was said by DeSantis on Fox. And this is what Gillum told Shep.
It's very clear that Mr. DeSantis is taking a page directly from the campaign manual of Donald Trump. But I think he's got another thing coming to him. If he thinks that in today's day and age, Florida voters are going to respond to that level of derision and division, they're sick of it. What we're trying to offer in this race
was
is
that
a
racist
north star
or a
where we want to go as a state.
Was that racist or a figment of speech?
Well, in the handbook of Donald Trump, they no longer do whistle calls. They're now using full bullhorns.
And that was a bullhorn?
And what I've got to say about that is that we've got to make sure that we stay focused, I think, on the issues that confront everyday people.
Yeah, so it's racist. That's what Gillum said, because Andrew Gillum is, you know, a Cory Booker, Black Lives Matter, socialist demagogue. And he's going to get hammered by DeSantis.
You think so? He went on, you know, we're better than this, Dan.
Let me be articulate and clear here, which is we're better than this in Florida. I believe the congressman can be better than this. I regret that his mentor in politics is Donald Trump.
Station after station. He was on cable show after cable show.
Better than what? It's the same pablum from the left. The same cheap, foundation-free, divisive racial politics. They're projecting onto others who they are. That's what Andrew Gillum is. He's a scumbag. He's a scoundrel. And I'm so exhausted with the phony baloney charges of racism. I'm so tired of focusing on a figure of speech in context you just heard. It is not defensible. Gillum's position is not defensible on any level. And neither is anyone who accuses DeSantis of suggesting, of making a racially charged statement. It's idiotic. If you say, if a coach in this day and age says, hey, stop dogging it in practice or stop dogging it when we run sprints, because Trump said somebody was a dog, that makes him a racist. Is that a dog whistle? Is that a dog blowhorn, Andrew Gillum? This guy, by the way, on the substance of the matter, since Andrew Gillum wants to rise above this, let's rise above it and talk about substance. This guy wants to abolish ICE. That's what he ran on.
Right.
He wants government-run health care. That's what he ran on, Florida. He wants a 40% increase in the state's corporate income tax. Well, that'll certainly quell the rush of people and businesses to Florida, being a low-tax state. And, oh, by the way, Tallahassee is the subject of a federal investigation. They had undercover FBI agents in his city hall. So we'll see where that goes. He assured Shep.
That he had nothing to do.
Oh, of course. He's not a target. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, guess what? When there's a federal investigation going on in the government that you head, that's a political problem, Andrew Gillum. And no amount of race hustling is going to make any of that go away.
312-642-5600 is our turnkey.pro answer line.
Robert in Oak Brook.
Yeah, real quick. All these governors, like our race here in Florida, they're going on legalizing weed, right?
Yeah.
Free health care for everybody. And the new millennials will not get it if they do get elected. When they go to buy a slider and it costs you $10, when you go to get a gallon of gasoline, it costs you $10, your car is going to cost you $100,000. They just don't get it. But if they get elected, it's going to bite them in the butt. And they'll be going, what do you mean I have to pay all this money? Well, because it's not free. See, they keep believing that health care is free, that somehow our government, we don't collect taxes. And real quick, there's 250,000 black business owners in Florida, all owning small businesses. Do you think they'll understand that if he raises their taxes by 40%, what that's going to do to them?
Yeah, I think they will. Thanks for the call, Robert. Mike in Melrose Park.
Hey, good morning. Didn't we go through this the other day with monkey business, the boat, and Gary Hart was a Democrat, so then how would monkey happen to be a racist term, you know? And monkey has always been a term for goofwit or, like you said, muck it up, or a euphemism for what it really means.
Yeah.
So, you know, these guys are just, they're nuts.
They are nuts. Thanks for the call, Mike. And we're all dumber for having to indulge their hysteria. Vince in Waukegan.
Hey, Dan. Yeah, I don't understand why people on the right don't know how to take and turn the left's words against them. You know, if the left wants to associate the word monkey with black people, then they're the racists, not us. Yeah, they'll turn around and stick it right back in their eye.
Thanks for the call, Vince. Absolutely. Definitely. And this is where, frankly, Trump is useful. Not always in the way he does it, but the direction in which he does it, which is, oh, you want to come at me? I'm going to come right back over the top at you because your position is illegitimate and indefensible. And that's what DeSantis and Florida Republicans, who, by the way, about a 200,000 vote spread between Republican primary voters and Democrat primary voters. So we'll see how that enthusiasm for Gillum is sustained or not.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Dan and Amy, yeah, I am trying not to monkey up our discussion of Ron DeSantis and our lobotomized political culture and press corps. Peter Gabriel, should his songs be taken off iTunes?
Yes.
Peter Gabriel.
Don't play the refrain with, oh, you're a monkey with a monkey. Oh, wait, am I going to get in trouble now?
You have to replace monkey. Come up with a replacement. I don't know. Chuck and Delavan, shock the monkey. Come up with something else.
I just suggested that they play that Shock the Monkey song. I don't know anything about it because I listen to country western all the time up here in Wisconsin.
Of course.
But anyway, I was just wondering about that song. So thank you for playing it.
All right.
You guys enjoy the day.
All right. Thanks for the call, Chuck. Wisconsin has both kinds of music, country and western.
Yeah.
Larry and Carol Stream.
Hey, good morning, Dan and Amy. I guess we're going to have to now go to every toy store in the country and pull that vicious racist game Barrel of Monkeys off the shelves.
Oh, I had that game.
Thanks for the call, Larry.
Did you play that game, Dan?
No.
Or that was too street for you, too?
I played chess and backgammon.
That's right.
Those are my board games.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Amy will be on with Shepard Smith this afternoon to discuss our playing of Shock the Monkey and whether or not that was racist, some kind of dog whistle.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Hey, a monkey
time.
Monkey. Oh, boy. Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, heavens. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. If he's listening, I would like Michael Nesmith to call in.
Oh.
And so we could ask him if he should apologize for what Ron DeSantis said and that he was part of the monkeys.
Okay.
Davy Jones unavailable.
Yeah, he passed away.
Too soon.
Yeah, too soon.
Mickey Dolenz.
Oh.
Is he unavailable?
I don't know. Mickey Dolenz? I don't know.
Peter Tork.
Transition.
Peter Tork is available.
Okay.
Yeah. So we'll prioritize any former members of the monkeys. We're discussing, incredibly, because we're trying to find an endpoint to the unmitigated ignorance that punctuates our political culture, and I'm trying in vain. I'm not sure there is one. Not on the left. The comments that Ron DeSantis made on Wednesday morning after he won the Republican nomination for governor of Florida, and his challenger, his opponent, is Tallahassee Mayor Andrew Gillum, who's a black man, surprise victor on the Democrat side. And Ron DeSantis, again, said this. If we can get there.
Florida elections are always competitive. And, this is a guy who, although he's much too liberal for Florida, I think he's got huge problems with how he's governed Tallahassee. He is an articulate spokesman for those far left views. And he's a charismatic candidate. And, I watched those Democrat debates. None of that was my cup of tea. But, he performed better than the other people there. So we've got to work hard to make sure that we continue Florida going in a good direction. Let's build off the success we've had on Governor Scott. The last thing we need to do is to monkey this up by trying to embrace a socialist agenda with huge tax increases and bankrupting the state. That is not going to work. That's not going to be good for Florida.
And don't bite off my head, anybody, but in this day and age, I would never use the word monkey, ever. I just, I would even say to some of my players, quit monkeying around. Just consider.
Would you make those noises without saying monkey?
Exactly. Because we live in different times. It's true. And I don't want to step in anything. I don't want to be accused of anything. That's why I do not use that word.
Well, it's fine. And I'm sure Ron DeSantis, just to avoid the silliness, would have preferred to have said muck it up or whatever in retrospect. But the position that you take is the position of the person who's happy to be rolled over. You're ceding the territory to the ignorant. You think that's the last word they'll redefine? They redefine one thing and they move on to the next thing. You think you can surrender in one space and then they're going to leave you alone? They're going to leave the language alone? Man is corrupted. First the language is corrupted, then man is corrupted. And that's what's happening. So it's going to be the next thing. It's going to be a colloquialism you've used since you were a little girl that is all of a sudden a dog whistle. And then what? And then you're going to say, I'll stop using it. Oh, I apologize. And then it'll be the next thing you have to apologize for, because there's no legitimacy in their position. There's no legitimacy in this attack. There's no legitimacy in this false indignation. So it should be confronted straight away. Political correctness was on the rise when I was an undergrad at Northwestern in the early 90s. And this is the attitude that people took. I don't want to offend. Golly, if you say that if I say this or if I take this position on this issue that I'm a racist, well, then I just won't say that and I just won't take that position. I'll just assent. I'll just genuflect before you. The hell I will. That's how you lose your culture. That's how you lose your mind.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line.
Pat in Lake in the Hills.
Morning, Dan and Amy. I guess my point is why does he even bring up his opponent and how tough he's going to be and how articulate he's going to be when he should be educating his voters on that guy's agenda and how it's going to personally hurt the voters?
Did you hear in 40 seconds, he did both. I don't know if you've ever watched a political campaign before. You never address your opponent at the gubernatorial level. Of course you do. It's ridiculous. And what he's saying is to Floridians and to the nation, we're taking nothing for granted. Even though Trump won this state, even though I'm coming off a two-term Republican governor, even though Florida leans red, I'm taking nothing for granted because this guy is talented. That's how he pulled the upset in the primary. But oh, by the way, despite his political talent, he's a socialist. DeSantis said socialist policies,
right?
The corporate tax increase that he has proposed, the abolishing ICE, all of the other leftist agenda points for what has become the Democrat Socialist Party of America. And that's just in 40 seconds. There's nothing DeSantis said that is not pro forma political speak after you win a primary and look forward to a general election. Not a thing. Thanks for the call, Pat.
Yeah, I still think he needs to take, everybody needs to take the time when they get a camera or a mic in front of them to educate the voter. And I didn't hear anything about him talking about his opponent's agenda.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, we'll play the cut for the fourth time to see if you can hear it. Can you cut, Pat? Because I've lost control of the mouse because we don't have a computer system that works. Here's Ron DeSantis again. Again, Ron DeSantis. This is just 40 seconds of his interview on Fox.
Florida elections are always competitive, and this is a guy who, although he's much too liberal for Florida, I think he's got huge problems with how he's governed Tallahassee. He is an articulate spokesman for those far left views, and he's a charismatic candidate. And I watched those Democrat debates; none of that was my cup of tea. But he performed better than the other people there. So we've got to work hard to make sure that we continue Florida going in a good direction. Let's build off the success we've had on Governor Scott. The last thing we need to do is to monkey this up by trying to embrace a socialist agenda with huge tax increases and bankrupting the state. That is not going to work. That's not going to be good for Florida.
Yeah, again, this is so unremarkable what DeSantis had to say. I'm just astounded that we have to discuss it. And I've given you some of the chapter and verse on Gillum, which I can assure you over the next 75 days, every Floridian will know about Gillum's problems in Tallahassee, FBI investigation, as well as his policy positions on everything from immigration to health care to tax policy.
This is the first day out for the gubernatorial contest.
It's just ridiculous, honestly.
Well, he made himself look like a fool. I was embarrassed for him when I saw him on MSNBC, then on CNN, then on Fox News, and back up on MSNBC. It didn't end yesterday.
Yeah, because the press corps amplifies ignorance. That's what the D.C. press corps does. Holly and Hudson.
Good morning, you two. Haven't talked to you in ages. Hey, Dan, you are absolutely right to what you just said about language, because this is what put Jordan Peterson on the fast track. When Canada tried to mandate and make up words that they wanted to make him use. And he put his foot down and said, this is how totalitarianism happens. So you are absolutely right to put your foot down, and we all should be doing it. On a personal note, I substitute teach, and I have used the term monkey recess forever. We are not turning this class into monkey recess. I will never say that again.
No.
I would never have the backing of the school board, the school department, the English. They would come for me. I know it. So you're right, Amy. I'm like Amy. So I'm asking you to stand up. But on the other hand, I don't think I could do it.
Well, okay. Thanks for the call, Holly.
I don't want to lose my volunteer job.
Yeah.
I just watch it. I'm.
Right.
Very judicious with the words that I use in front of children.
No, it's inspiring. I think that's what we should teach our kids. If thugs push you around, just follow their orders. Right? My gym teacher in grade school, stop monkeying around. He grabbed one of us by the ear. Was he a racist?
No.
Obscene. Absurd. But that's what we wanted. Oh, I don't want controversy. Okay, I will just be a dutiful drone.
Well, I bet if DeSantis could do it again, he would say mucking it up, don't you think?
Don't care.
Or messing this up.
Don't care. This is the teachable moment. It has nothing to do with DeSantis or Gillum. It has to do with all of us. You're going to let people push you around. Well, of course, in Illinois, you love it. We love getting pushed around by thugs in Illinois.
Little thugs, little ankle biters.
Not only do we get pushed around, we say thank you. I want you to stay. We're so afraid of our own shadows here. We're afraid to even do what we know is right in privacy, much less in public. The privacy of the ballot box, for example. Sad. And it's unvirtuous for all of you people who think you're good people. Let me remind you again of one of my favorite observations of C.S. Lewis. Courage is the formation of virtue at its testing point. If you do not have courage, it is impossible to possess any virtue you think you have, because when you're tested, you'll fold. And what I'm hearing from some people, even people I like and people that I'm otherwise a fellow traveler with ideologically, is yeah, I'll fold. I know you will. I know most people will. You see it every day. So maybe this is a time for a little self-reflection on that score. Live on your knees. It's a great way to live. A great lesson to impart on the kiddies, isn't it? Dan in Libertyville.
Dan, I cannot thank you enough for what you're saying today. Everything you're saying is things I've been saying for years. It is very, very disappointing to see people give in, even when they know they're right, even when they know they're in good standing, they haven't done anything wrong, they will surrender. And what happened with this Don Lemon thing, I saw it last night. I said, this can't be right. I saw the episode last night where he said, in caption, shown on the screen so that you couldn't, you know, misunderstand what he was telling you. He tried to turn this statement around to saying, don't monkey this up by electing a black Dem.
Yeah, right.
That is what he...
Yeah, of course.
And it wasn't what the guy said.
Right. That's
it wasn't what he said at all.
Thanks for the call, Dan. That's
telling me my girlfriend lied?
Don Lemon retaining his title as the dumbest man on television. That's what the dumbest man on television does. Philip in Blue Island.
thank you. It's funny how educated, especially white men.
Yeah.
I know you went to Northwestern and DeSanto. I think he's a Harvard educated individual. So
yeah.
to pick out words that we know are historically or racist, especially like monkey, he doesn't have to say the N word necessary for the dog whistle to sound out. The N word, mm-hmm. You can say a lot of different things, a caca, whatever, all these different terms that racists use. Mm-hmm. And for you to protect or defend his right to, yeah, okay, he can be a racist or he can be a closeted racist as long as he wants to. But for you and others to come on this radio program to defend it is apprehensible, especially in 2018.
Is it apprehensible is it apprehensible or reprehensible? Why don't you learn the language?
Well, whatever. I'm not Harvard educated.
Yeah, you're not educated at all, Philip. You're just a race hustler who sees everything through that racial prism. Because we've talked to Philip from Blue Island many times. Philip from Blue Island calls to say everything is racist. And there are people out there that want to believe that. Go ahead. Where does it get you? First of all, it's not true. But there's no convincing you of something you're hell-bent to believe. And where does it get you exactly? How's it going? How's it going in Blue Island, Philip? Chicago Democrats rule the roost in the South Suburbs, in Chicago, in the state of Illinois, have for as long as you've been alive, Philip. How's it going? Good? The highest black unemployment rate in the city. Do you want to talk in the Chicago's in the country for an urban center? You want to talk about that? Do you want to talk about the violence on the west and south sides of the city that the Democrat power structure just seeks to contain? Their words, since we're focused on words. Do you want to talk about that? You want to talk about the lack of black entrepreneurship, the relative deficit of black-owned businesses, black families' net worth in this country with respect to and in comparison to other demographics, as we've talked about with our friend Robert Blackwell from Killer Spin, black entrepreneur on the south side of the city. You want to talk about that? Should we bring on Bob Woodson, civil rights leader, Thomas Sowell, Walter Williams, their proteges like Jason Riley, John McWhorter, to have a conversation about this? And when they have the same positions that, you know, the Harvard-educated or the Northwestern-educated white guy has, are they racist, too? Are they dog-whistling as well? What are they, Uncle Toms? We played Jim Brown yesterday. What's he, Philip from Blue Island, and the other race hustlers, the other race-obsessed? Is he an Uncle Tom? Is he a sellout? Does he have the standing to comment on these matters? Does he have to watch his words as well, lest he be tabbed with the R word by a Philip from Blue Island? Charlatanism. And I'm not playing along. Sorry.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, and did you see this? Dick's sales have gone limp.
Dick's Sporting Goods?
Dick's Sporting Goods.
Okay.
Yeah, is that not obvious?
Well, you never know with you peoples.
The decision to pull back from the hunting business has dragged down the retailer's latest quarterly results. Comparable store sales fell 4%. Not adjusting for the 53rd week last year, the company's same-store sales declined nearly 2%. And that bucked a trend in the retail sector, which largely has benefited from a surge in consumer spending fueled by a booming economy. Mm. Oh, this after, remember, Dick's Sporting Goods decided to pull back on their gun sales after the Parkland shooting.
Right.
Related story.
I don't go to Dick's because it's way too expensive. Have you been in there lately? Buying for your fictitious children and the fictitious sports teams they're on?
Sometimes I'll stop at the one in Lombard to get shells on my way out to, the sporting club I belong to. But, I try to avoid it for exactly the same reason that I think a lot of people are trying to avoid it, the gun sales policy. A lot of places I can buy ammo.
That's true. Yeah. Well, where else can you buy ammo?
That's my business.
Okay.
Thanks
for coming in.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks for sharing.
Sure. No
I really
problem.
Appreciate that.
Related story, and this is from NPR. The school shootings that weren't, let me repeat, from NPR. NPR, of the 240 school shootings reported in the 2015-2016 school year, according to the U.S. Department of Education.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. 240 schools report at least one incident involving a school-related shooting, which is far higher than other estimates. NPR looked into those reports, reached out to every one of the schools repeatedly over the course of 3 months, and found that more than two-thirds of these reported incidents never happened.
Really?
NPR reporting, we were able to confirm just 11 reported incidents, either directly with the schools or through media reports.
In 11 out of 240?
Yeah. In 161 cases, schools or districts attested that no incident took place or couldn't confirm one. In at least 4 cases, we found something did happen, but it didn't meet the government's parameters for a shooting.
Well, like, would they find a weapon or a gun in someone's bag?
Well, perhaps. We're not specific about that, but yeah.
I remember one case, they said there was a school shooting, and it was actually a 30-year-old man who took a gun from his father and committed suicide in his car a block away from the school, and they tallied that as a school shooting.
Well, that's an example of probably of what NPR is referencing when they're looking into the statistics. Lies, damn lies, and statistics from the U.S. Department of Education. And why is this important? It's not to minimize the actual school shootings, of course, like Parkland, horrific events. It's to provide context so you understand the order of the magnitude of the problem, because that's the basis on which you should make public policy. The basis of making public policy shouldn't be hysteria. You usually get it wrong if you're out of your gourd or if you're just trying to feel your way into the rule of law. Understand the scope and nature of the problem and then thoughtfully try to address it through public policy changes as needed, where, you know, if there was some evidence that a public policy change would enhance safety in this instance. So when we talk about the epidemic of school shootings or what's going on with school shootings that hasn't been going on previously in our country's history, well, maybe, as it turns out, not much. So do we need to ban video games, and do we need to ban handguns and other firearms? Do we need to change the way we live? Do we need to make schools bunkers, harden the targets? Maybe. Maybe in some instances it makes sense. And maybe there's a significant overreaction because of the horror of what happened at Newtown or Parkland. There's an overreaction in terms of the likelihood and the ability to respond in most schools. So the kind of, you know, who's next? Everyone sends their child to school and they don't know what's going to. Well, of course, there's always uncertainty, but there's a difference between it being a 1 in 2 shot, no pun intended, and, you know, a 1 in 99, 1 in 100 chance, right? I mean, it's just significant, and frankly, good for NPR for digging into the data and not just accepting the government's stats. 240 reported by the U.S. Department of Education. NPR can confirm 11.
Oof. That's a big disparity between numbers. I mean, that's, you know, it's almost fraudulent.
Yeah, well,
for them, the Department of Education, to release those numbers.
Well, it is. It's irresponsible,
or
right?
Maybe the school districts to report it, and then, you know, when they do the follow-up, there's no there. It's just strange.
Well, right. And, you know, we just collect data that we're given. You know, nobody's ever responsible. Data collects itself, and then it just publishes itself. No, I mean, if you're going to put out information that you want people to rely on, that you want people to understand the nature of a problem, you know, uses the basis to understand the nature of a problem, then maybe, I don't know, do some fact checking, do a little bit of digging, make sure you know what you're talking about. Yeah. If NPR can do it, believe me, I can only imagine how many bureaucrats are at their computers. Well, not now, because it would only be 7:15 in D.C., but
right.
In 3 or 4 hours for their three-hour shift at the Department of Education to play solitaire, that could be doing some phone calls and some basic fact-checking that an eighth grader could do. And this brings us to this story, which I rather enjoy.
Yes.
J.D. Martinez, you know who he is?
Doesn't he play baseball for the Red Sox, right?
This is like talking from Sean to Sean from Elmwood Park. I
John hates sports.
I know.
I don't know. You just got to check his man card. How do you hate sports?
I told him the other day that I'm playing golf with Ryan Sandberg.
Oh, you are?
Rhino.
Oh.
Yeah.
Check out his hair.
check out mine. We're
going to
compare
follicles.
Notes.
Number 23.
And he's like,
Sean doesn't even know that.
It's number 23. He's like Ryan Sandberg with a quizzical look on his face. I'm like, you don't know who Ryan Sandberg was? He's like, he was a...
oh, my gosh. Did he play hockey?
He's like, yes. He's like baseball player. Didn't he play for the Cubs? You know what he said? He played first base for the Cubs. I mean, honestly.
Wait, how are you hooked up with Ryan Sandberg? And do you need a caddy?
I travel in those circles.
Oh, that's right. Big shooter over here.
Yeah. Des Bryant.
I know. He's your BFF now, too.
I'm his guy. Brett Conway, great kicker for Penn State championship team and Redskins.
Right.
He's a member at Olympia Fields. I play golf with him, too.
So are you playing at Olympia Fields?
A little envious, yeah.
Today?
Mm-hmm.
Get a sponsor yet, huh?
Yeah.
Your title is going to be your temporary sponsor?
I'm hoping to get the Restore. I'm hoping to join the Restore team with Urlacher and Sandberg.
Then I can see your face on billboards everywhere I go.
Yeah.
Gosh, do they shove that down your throat.
And
huh?
My new hairline.
Well, let's see what you got under your hat. Are you follically challenging it?
No.
Oh, you won't take off your hat?
No,
what?
I will, because I'm fine.
Are you going? Oh, your hair.
Yeah.
But wait, do you have the spot up here, though?
No, I don't have the fryer tuck. No, I'm fine. It's plush. I mean, this is rich, luxurious
yes.
hair.
Okay.
So I'm, you know, I got other problems, but that's not it. So anyway.
So back to baseball.
Baseball.
Right, yes.
I mean, but honestly, if you don't know who Ryan Sandberg is, and
you need to leave the state.
The country. I mean, come on. It's ridiculous. Sean from Elmwood Park's embarrassing. When he fills in for Walsh today at 5 o'clock, make sure you call him Bustis Chops. But we're talking about J.D. Martinez, of course, MVP candidate, a perennial MVP candidate because he's a big slugger, also great hitter. He's hitting, I think, like 335 with more than 100 RBIs. I mean, the Red Sox are like 50 games over 500, and the Cubs think they're going to win another World Series. Hilarious.
Uh-huh.
He tweeted something in 2013.
Okay, now honestly, these real quick, all of these tweets that are coming out from baseball players back 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years ago, do they have interns sitting in rooms just going through all of their tweets?
The sports press corps they're like the DC press corps. They're like CNN.
That? Who's time for that?
They're just trying to jackpot, you know, kids when they were tweeting stupid stuff.
Yeah, they were 17 years old. A lot of them were 17,
18. Yeah. This is, he was 25 at the time,
all
Martinez.
Right, well, still a man child in my mind.
Man, because what he tweeted is historically accurate. And unlike those who would fold in the face of heat from the press corps, I'm sorry. I'm sorry for being right. I'm sorry for being thoughtful. I'm sorry for telling the truth.
What did he tweet? I'm dying to know.
He tweeted a picture of Hitler with a quote from Hitler: to conquer a nation, first disarm its citizens. And then he added to that meme, yeah, this is why I always stay strapped, hashtag the truth. When he was asked about the photo by the press corps, he said, I love my country, I stand by the Constitution, I stand by the Second Amendment. It was one of those things.
America.
It was one of those things where I was really touched at the time. I saw it and I posted it. I had no intent to offend anyone. It was mostly just to state a point, a political point at the time. He also told reporters, this is exactly why he doesn't talk politics. Everybody has a right to stand by what they believe in, and that's what makes us American. We're not all going to believe in the same things, but that's what makes this country so great. So he didn't walk it back, and that's the best part of this. Now, that's the quote that he posted is not actually sourced to Hitler, but that's what Hitler did.
That's what he did.
So it's directionally correct, and that's what every dictator does, is to disarm the populace, to minimize the resistance to totalitarianism. So that is correct. So it's historically accurate. That's what Hitler actually did. And if people are offended by history, history doesn't care about your feelings any more than math does, and thankfully, any more than J.D. Martinez does.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
So, Dan, you're not the most popular person from Wheaton anymore.
I never was. It's here's the Wheaton Pantheon. There's Red Grange.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Galloping Ghost. Chuck Long.
Right.
Ken Graham.
University of Iowa, Chuck Long.
The Belushis.
Oh, that's right. Oh, my God.
They're raised in Wheaton and went to Wheaton Central.
Oh.
Which is no longer with us. Now is Mariano's. it's true.
But now you...
Well, wait. Hold
yeah,
on.
What else?
Then there's... let's see. What else?
Who else is from Wheaton?
Who else? Wasn't Kevin Streelman from Wheaton?
Mm. I think that's a pretty good resume there.
And then it's me.
Then it's you?
Yeah.
Well, you've been bigfooted by a senior in high school, Jack Olson, who goes to Wheaton Warrenville South. First opening season game, he scored 8 field goals and broke an Illinois high school record.
What did you say? Did you say scored?
He kicked and he scored 8 field goals.
Are you like Ron Manuel? You don't say scored field goals. He kicked the field goals.
He kicked the field goals. That's what I said.
What was
the score? A 44-yarder, a 48-yarder, a 24-yarder, a 20-yarder.
Yeah, 3 over 40. Or 4 over 40, 4 of the 8. So this kid's going to college, and his parents are lucky. They'll have college scholarship for that.
Oh, yeah, big money.
But for most kickers, like once you make one field goal, I guess, it just keeps rolling with you, so... Well, like, if you make one, you just have the confidence, like, over the night, like, to just keep making. Coach Mihich kept giving me the opportunity to kick another field goal, so I just kept taking it. They were all congratulating me on the sideline. Some of them, like, come up to me, and, like, when I was on, like, 6th field goal, they would say, you just broke the state record and stuff like that, and they congratulate me. And they would also just keep encouraging me on the sideline, like, saying how good I'm doing and stuff like that. My phone, I hadn't... A lot of texts on my phone and stuff. And
he was hailed a hero when he went back to school on Monday.
He also broke the record for the use of the word in a 1-minute response.
Like what?
So
like,
he's not going to college on an English scholarship, that's for sure.
Oh, he's a kid.
Let's get it together. This is Wheaton you're representing.
Yeah.
Speak like an adult. What's this like stuff? Are you a valley girl? Do some laps, Olson. What the hell's wrong with you?
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Listen to podcasts of Joe Walsh and Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on the AM 560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. New research suggests more money does lead to a more satisfying life. Money does lead to happiness, despite the aphorism to the contrary. Surveys of thousands of Swedish... Well,
oh, here we go. Now my ears perked up.
Yeah, right. Surveys of thousands of Swedish welfare queens have provided persuasive evidence that money does make you happy. Swedish lottery winners. They were substantially more satisfied with their lives than lottery losers. Those who won prizes were hundreds of thousands of dollars, reported being more satisfied than winners of mere tens of thousands of dollars. And according to the researchers, the increased happiness was still evident up to two decades after a big win. So a longitudinal study. You can read all the details in the long-run effects of lottery wealth on psychological well-being, working paper by Erik Lindqvist.
Lindqvist.
Why do you have to say that, like, sing-songy? Do you have to say that's everything is Swedish in a sing-songy voice?
Yeah, you can't speak so Swedishly. Annoying. Lindqvist. It's Lindqvist.
That's why I was thrown out of Stockholm. Stockholm School of Economics, and some colleagues across the pond at NYU as well. Now, this runs counter to some smaller sample research, including 22 winners of the Illinois State Lottery. With a control group of 22, the lottery winners.
Did they even get paid? Because remember, there was a time when we were so broke as a state, and I tell people this story,
true,
that lottery winners didn't get their prize right away. They had to wait.
Yeah. Well, there was this belief that lottery winners are not happier.
Oh, yeah, because we always do the story, they're down on their luck, then, you know, family members come out of the blue, ask for money, you give them the money, you don't get paid back, and their lives are ruined.
One of the landmark studies, 1978, say lottery winners and accident victims is happiness relative. It compared, this is now, you know, 40 years old, but compared 22 winners of the Illinois State Lottery back in a time when the state could pay winners.
Okay.
With a control group of 22, the lottery winners rate themselves as happier after winning their prizes, but because the sample size was so small, the researchers concluded it might reflect the influence of chance and failed to note that these data were consistent with the idea that lottery winners are substantially happier, which is a problem with small samples. But this more recent study by those Swedes suggests that they are. Hmm. So,
do you think you'd be happier if you won the lottery? What would you do with your money?
Well,
what would you buy your fictitious children?
No, I mean, you know, money is just a means to ends. And so to have more resources to put to desired ends, both philanthropic and otherwise, yeah, I would like that. Sure, of course. Mm-hmm. Like to be able to do more. You want to do more. But I mean, but it's not like my contentness or whatever is not contingent on that.
Right.
It would just be, sure, of course. Be nice. This really must have impressed one bride named Susan in Canada, whose social media rants went viral after she canceled her wedding and explained why she did. She wanted to get a bunch of money for her wedding the old-fashioned way by imposing on her friends and family that were to attend her wedding.
Right. Well, normally, I've been to weddings where the bride stands there with a silk bag and just takes envelopes of cash and checks. They don't want any gifts. They didn't register for anything.
Yeah.
There were the thing, it said on the invitation, cash or checks only. We are not registered at any store.
Yeah. Take my wife, please. That's why I don't go to weddings, number one.
What was the last wedding you've been to? Do you remember?
Mm.
Do you know that love is patient? Do you know that love is kind?
I've heard that. Yeah. What about this approach, though?
All right, so what did she do?
She wanted a dream honeymoon.
All right.
According to her, I wanted to be a Kardashian for a day and then live my life like normal. So she's, I don't need to be showered with jewels and to live a rich lifestyle. But for one day, for my honeymoon, I want to, blow it out. And
That's fair.
Well, you better wait for it. She pegged the price tag at her dream honeymoon, dream wedding slash honeymoon, $60,000. They started out 15, and then she started dreaming bigger, and it got to 60. And the way she was going to finance this was to demand each attendee to her wedding pay $1,500.
$1,500
yeah.
to attend her wedding.
Yeah. So have you been to a wedding where there's an actual price tag on it, where there's a ticket price?
No one gives that much money. The most you could probably give is $500. $300's okay. But $1,500? What do you get for $1,500? Are you going on the honeymoon with her?
You can't put a price on her happiness, Susan's happiness. Well, actually, you can. It's $1,500.
Yeah, it's $1,500.
Yeah.
If I was the groom, I'd run away.
Well,
she's got some problems.
It didn't come together as she hoped.
Oh, no.
How could we have our wedding that we dreamed of without proper funding? We'd sacrifice so much and only asked each guest for around $1,500. We talked to a few people who even promised us more to make our dream come true. My maid of honor pledged $5,000 along with her planning services.
Aww.
We tearfully thanked and accepted. My ex's family, now you know how it ends, offered to contribute $3,000. So our request for $1,500 for all other guests was not effing out of the ordinary. This is where she goes full bridezilla. Like, we made it clear, if you couldn't contribute, you weren't invited to our exclusive wedding. It's a once-in-a-lifetime party. Then the couple sent out invitations, and only 8 guests RSVP'd. And 8 times 1,500 is not $60,000, even with the other commitments I just mentioned. We were effing livid, right, Susan? How was this supposed to happen without a little help from our friends? To make matters worse, my ex's family took back their offer, $3,000.
Yeah.
Suddenly more people backed out, including the maid of honor. My best friend since childhood, my second family, I was so shocked and tearful.
Bridezilla. She turned into one of those, and people said, uh-uh.
Then her fiancé offered these last words.
Lose my number?
No.
Never email me again?
He suggested that they just tie the knot in Vegas.
Perfect.
Not to her. Am I supposed to get married in the heart of shady gamblers, alcoholics, and the get-rich-fast fallacy? Says the woman who's trying to shake down her friends for $60,000. I mean, you get rich fast.
$1,500 ahead.
Uh-huh.
That's so stupid.
Yeah, she also accused, she then accused her fiancé of talking behind her back. She's broken off ties with the maid of honor. For rescinding the $5,000 offer, apparently. And she overheard her fiancé talking in the basement and calling her a stuck-up B.I., you know.
Yacht.
Right. Anyway, I'm exhausted. I'm bone-tired. My heart is not the same. It's stone cold. And she then fled social media, never to be heard from again, at least not since this bizarre and very colorful rant. If you want to check it out online, I'd encourage you to do so. You Google bride and $1,500 or DuckDuckGo bride and $1,500 attendance fee, and you'll get all the details. But
is she hot at least? I mean, what?
Haven't seen a picture.
Well, I'll let you know if she's hot or not.
All right. Obviously the overriding point is ticket prices for weddings.
No.
Why not?
Because that's tacky. And
it's not tacky to hold a silk bag and say, put your money here.
I was at an Italian wedding, huh? The Scaramucci's, huh?
Okay. Racial slur.
That's not a racial
ethnic
slur.
Ethnic slur.
They're the Scaramucci's. They're from Mount Prospect.
Do they talk like that?
Yeah, they do. And the Swedes talk like this.
Scusi, babbity boopy. Scusi, babbity boopy.
Is that the Scaramucci's from Mount Prospect?
Yeah, I hope they're listening because they'll be laughing.
Bruce in Bloomingdale.
You guys are killing me out here. My wife was in the wedding business for 19 years, and I swear she's got the best stories of all. Drunken bridesmaids sacrificing their honor behind the bar. Groomsmen beating up their ride home. She used to work at a posh golf course in the lovely town of Winfield. And if you want to see absolute classless, go to a wedding party and stay about 2 hours.
Really?
That's all you'll need to see. She's the only bride. She's the only wedding planner in Illinois with a confirmed kill when the uncle of the bride dropped dead in the bathroom.
Oh my
gosh! Have a great day.
Wait, I want to hear more stories. Oh, I can listen to that.
Well,
all day.
Well, we need Bruce's wife to call in.
Well, I had a friend who got so drunk at her wedding that she never barely made it to the altar, and then supposedly was going to take a nap, slept through her entire wedding reception, never got up, tried to wake her up. Her dad, who spent $20,000 plus, and this is back in the 90s, you know, on this reception for his daughter, never got to have the daddy-daughter dance, nothing.
Yeah.
I'm still married, though. But it was a great party that she missed.
How was your wedding? What was the take of your
really
wedding?
Really too soon.
It's too soon? What was that?
I don't want to talk about
the 90s?
It was a colossal waste of money. Terry Savage told me in the makeup room, don't do it. Use that money for a down payment of a house and just go to a bar down the street. And then Allison Rosati was horrified. She said, Terry, this is her dream wedding. Don't buy, you know. And sure enough, Terry Savage was right. Money advice I could have used.
Wait, where was your wedding?
I don't want to talk about
it. How much was it?
I had it on a Sunday, so it was a lot cheaper. On a Sunday night? In between Christmas and New Year's.
What, like at the Ground Round in Mount Prospect or where?
Yeah, we all took peanut shells off the floor. No, it was at the Hilton Chicago on South Michigan Avenue.
Oh.
Yeah, it was nice. In the Grand Ballroom. And then I had a dessert table that I never went by because I didn't see it. The 300 plus people were there. So stupid because I looked at my wedding list the other day. Of those people, I talked to maybe five. And two of them are my sisters.
How much cash was put up?
Oh my gosh!
How much cash did you get? Did you have a silk bag where you were collecting the booty?
I got the most money from Natalie Martinez, which is nice. But no, I didn't sit there with a matching silk bag and collect money at the door.
Yeah,
I didn't do that. What was? Because we have a little more class. In this
yeah, obviously. What was the?
Susan's listening. Right
what was the net take?
You know what? I didn't get because I registered.
Oh.
That was a big mistake.
How many blenders
so
do you
many,
need?
No, crystal vases. Oh my gosh.
Sure, lovely.
So many crystal vases. But I did just go to a pawn shop because Larry Wirt gave me sterling silver champagne flutes, and I don't drink champagne, and I just hawked them.
No, Larry Wirt. Tribute Media. Just in case you were wondering where those champagne flutes
went.
Yeah.
They're at a pawn shop on Irving Park.
Well, I mean, you're trying to get even, right, with
the outlay at
the Hilton.
I don't drink champagne.
Mm-hmm.
Why have them sit there? I'm purging, getting rid of things. So yeah.
And where'd you go on your honeymoon?
Oh my God, I don't want to talk about.
Well, just the location.
I went to Hawaii, okay.
It's nice.
We'd be done. Oh, look, we have to take a break. Look,
it's expensive.
Look at the time it is.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. If you're a conservative, are you considering not using Facebook if you currently do? Are you considering stopping using Facebook because of their treatment of conservative content? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. We asked the question because the Media Research Center did a national survey of conservatives likely to vote, and it showed that 90% of conservatives have used Facebook at some point. Less than half, however, are both using it and committed to continuing to do so. In point of fact, Facebook is at risk of losing 32% of conservative users, according to Media Research Center's polling. Two-thirds have less trust in Facebook than they did a year ago. Two-thirds do not trust Facebook to treat all political views equally. And a quarter are considering leaving Facebook because of their, quote-unquote, censorship of conservatives. Another Well, and as I said, about half less than half are using it and committed to doing so. So, I mean, that market feedback, the perhaps would be more effective than any effort to impose federal regulation of Facebook and more appropriate. This is how the marketplace works. You would do something and you get a market reaction. And by the way, this survey comes on the heels of a call from inside the Facebook fortress.
Oh, yeah. Hundreds of employees complained of a intolerant liberal culture.
We have a problem with political diversity, published in the New York Times. Senior Facebook engineer Brian Emmerich confirmed Trump's allegation, writing that, quote, we are a political monoculture that's intolerant of different views. We claim to welcome all perspectives, but are quick to attack, often in mobs, anyone who presents a view that appears to be in opposition to left-leaning ideology. We throw labels that end in obe and ist around at each other, attacking each other's character rather than their ideas. He goes on to talk about the monoculture of Facebook. We do this so consistently that employees are afraid to say anything when they disagree with what's around them politically. HR has told me that this is not a rare concern, and I've personally gotten over 100 messages to that effect. Your colleagues are afraid because they know that they, not their ideas, will be attacked. They know that all the talk of openness to perspectives does not apply to causes of social justice, immigration, diversity, and equality. On these issues, you can either keep quiet or sacrifice your reputation and career. Emmerich also writes, we tear down posters welcoming Trump supporters. We regularly propose removing Peter Thiel from the Facebook board because he supported Trump. We're quick to suggest firing people who turn out to be misunderstood, and even quicker to conclude our colleagues are bigots. And as you said, more than 100 Facebook employees have joined Emmerich to form an inline group, an online group called Facebookers for Political Diversity. And this internal message board is where this was posted and then published by the New York Times.
I mean, think what they did to Diamond and Silk. You know, at Facebook, they pretty much kicked them off for, I don't even know what the relationship's like now, but their material, their content was squashed by Facebook.
Right.
And they had to take it to Twitter.
And to their fans, right? I mean, there's no, like, imposing somebody's content on somebody else.
You have to click on it. It's not clickbait. You can just watch it if you want to, and if you don't want to watch it, but it should be there.
Right.
Both sides should be there, both opinions.
That's what media does. It allows for the creation of communities, builds communities, and that's what individuals did, whether it's Prager University on YouTube or Diamond and Silk on Facebook. And then they come in and seek to basically divide and conquer, eliminate those communities, and do so perhaps in contract of terms of in violation of their terms of use contract, which is what Prager University is litigating.
Right. It's anti-conservative bias on their social network.
And this is coming again. I mean, much like the James Damore memo at Google, this is coming from inside the fortress. Interestingly, too, this occurs at the same time. There's another study out about how Gen Zers, these are people born after 95.
Oh, what are they?
Generation Z.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, sure, I knew that.
Okay. survey of 9,000 internet users from the research firm Ampeer Analysis finds that people 18 to 24 had significantly changed their attitudes towards social media in the past 2 years. 66% of this demo agreed with the statement, quote, social media is important to me in 2016. That's down to 57% who make the same claim in 2018. A survey across the pond in Britain found that 63% of school children would be happy if social media had never been invented.
Wow.
It's really interesting.
I wouldn't have wanted to grow up in the environment that our kids are growing up now.
Well,
no way.
And the kids, a lot of the kids aren't enjoying it either. There's one marketing firm executive said there are significant cracks beginning to show when it comes to Generation Z's, 18 to 24-year-olds, relationship to social media because of, you know, the pit that social media is in so many instances, which, again, it's not...
It could give you the highest of the highs and the lowest of the lows. Because sometimes, you know, if you're in high school, you're not invited to a party and you're watching all your friends at a function or at an event and you're not invited to.
Well, right. It's
and then there's shaming, then there's bullying.
It's a neutral communication channel. What it is a mirror of our humanity and the state of civilization, and that's what people are finding in many respects rather vile.
Yeah.
Perhaps a bit of a wake-up call, and if the 18 to 24-year-olds are getting hip to it first, then good for them. Interestingly, in the 45-plus age bracket, your age group, Amy?
Your age group, Dan, I'm a little older, but okay, go on.
The proportion of who value social media has increased from 23 to 28%.
Hmm.
It's still a fraction. Tom in Bolingbrook, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. I'm a Facebook addict, sober for 6 months now.
Hi,
the
Tom.
The big challenge I see with Facebook. Hello?
Yeah, no, I'm go ahead. Never mind.
The big challenge is that we can't ever actually delete our profile. I've noticed that I've been off Facebook. I went neutral on or whatever it is, the device you turn it off. And no matter what I do, it's still there. I have friends who still think I'm on Facebook and message me. So that's one of the challenges. If we could get them to fix that, it would actually allow us to influence the market by deleting our profile. Thank you.
Oh, damn.
Thanks for the call,
ask
Tom.
Him why he got rid of Facebook, but
because
of biased behavior, right?
No, probably because he wasn't invited to that party you were talking about. Miles and Wheaton.
Hi, Dan. Rather than try to have the government regulate Facebook or these companies, they should just let people pass a law like the Consumer Debt Protection Act or Fair Debt Collection Practice Act and allow attorney's fees when they violate the user agreement. That could put them on an even playing ground with the individuals like Diamond and Silk with the monstrous companies. They could sue, and the companies would have to change their behavior because they'd be liable for attorney's fees as well as the damages that might be limited in some cases and not worth hiring an attorney for.
Hmm.
Wow, this is really
interesting
lawyer
thought.
Speak here.
Yeah, all
and
right.
He's from Wheaton. He's one of the smart ones.
That's exactly right. Thanks for the call, Miles. Appreciate it. Interesting thought. I mean, again, we're talking about this is a private transaction, and if you're not abiding the terms of the contract, then you do have legal exposure and should, because that's fraudulent. So it's an interesting thought. Vince in St. Charles.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. I'm on, and I like to push it as much as I can and see what they do. And also, I was unfriended by one of my friends because one of my national pastimes is beating up Illinois and Chicago every chance I get.
Sure.
So I was unfriended, but I enjoy just getting information, things like that. I'll push it as much as when they kick me off, they kick me off, and that goes.
Thanks for the call, Vince. Yeah, appreciate it. Yeah, I mean, I'm on Facebook.
Facebook a lot.
Well,
I mean, to promote.
Yeah, promote the show.
Yeah, and some philanthropic work you do, and then to get into it with people.
Well, I mean, it's just a forum. It's just communication on Twitter. I mean, I don't use Instagram. I can only handle so much social media.
Oh, Instagram, I can't. It's too much. Have you been unfriended lately by anyone?
I don't know. I don't care.
How do you know when you get unfriended, by the way?
I don't know.
Do you get an alert?
I have no idea.
I have no idea either.
Yeah. Somebody didn't follow me on Twitter or something. I don't get the dopamine kick. I really don't care. But it is, I mean, it is genius. These social media companies, it's genius. I respect what was built because it is a great way to share information. I get a lot of information. And think about all of our listeners who are on social media and they send us story ideas or comments, something we may have missed. It's helpful. So you create community around common content or common values, and you can have some interesting discussions and you communicate with people that are fun to communicate with and get information you might miss. So it's an article, you know, whatever. So it's great. It's so the whole kind of like boogeymanning social media. I'm not down with that, and I'm not down with regulating it either. But I am down with transparency, and I am down with amplifying views when you get something like this bit of a revolt inside Facebook, telling us confirming what we know to be true, so then we can have an intelligent discussion about it. And for some transparency through market pressure from Facebook or Twitter or anybody else. Mike in Griffith, Indiana.
Hey, what you've missed regarding freedom of speech and the ability to speak and the ability to be heard is that the ability to speak is simply to post on Facebook and have your comments disseminated equally regardless of what is in them. If you, for example, took 1,000 people and put them on your list as a very staunch conservative, and then you had a liberal put the same 1,000 people on there, and then they put out liberal propaganda and then conservative propaganda, the liberal one is going to get disseminated 1,000 times in a row to every single individual on that list. The conservative one will not. That violates their terms of agreement. I have proof of this because I run a political site called MX Cartoons out of Hammond, Indiana, and we are shadow banned all over the place. We know it because we have the logins to multiple users. We check all the time. They are simply discriminately banning conservative talk, and that violates the user agreement that Facebook has you check off when you open an account.
Yeah, okay. Well, then there's exposure, like I said. That's similar to the Prager University argument against YouTube and Google. I get that. Okay. Thank
right,
you.
But I think you yesterday you tried to dismiss any lawsuit against them as it's not a freedom of speech issue.
No.
It's a freedom to post issue.
No.
We don't need to be heard. We just need to have the ability to post.
No, I didn't dispute a contract complaint. What I disputed and dismissed was the idea that there's any constitutional issue here, which is the same distinction you're making. So those, no, we're on the same page. Thanks.
Okay, yeah, it's not the freedom. That's not the freedom to be heard. It's the freedom to speak.
Well, it's not freedom at all. It's a contract issue. You just said it. Terms of use.
Well, freedom as opposed to I understand that delineation, but we're going to try to end up with a class action lawsuit on this because it's just a simple matter of statistical facts. We're not getting through, but liberals are. And when you line up a same list, let's say 100 people, 1,000, the stuff the liberals send out gets to every single one. The 1,000 for a Republican or a conservative barely makes it out the door.
Thanks for the call, Mike. Well, I mean, and it's consistent with what this Facebook engineer, Brian Amerish, posted and the New York Times published yesterday, too, about the monoculture and what they do with respect to posts or content with which they disagree or runs counter to the culture there. So, right. And I mean, that was consistent with what we heard when Zuckerberg was before Congress, and the Diamond and Silk example was referenced a number of times. And, you know, there was the promise to look into it and correct it and all that sort of stuff. So I hear you. Ed in Oak Brook. Hey, Ed. Ed in Oak Brook. Ed in Oak Brook.
Ed
in Oak Brook. Ed in Oak Brook has dozed off. All right, bye, Ed.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Brass monkey, that funky monkey. Brass monkey.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. And remember the CNN ad in response to the attacks from President Trump about how committed they are to the facts and the truth. Remember?
Oh, yeah, like an apple is an apple and a banana is a banana.
This is an apple. Some people might try to tell you that it's a banana. They might scream banana, banana, banana over and over and over again. They might put banana in all caps. You might even start to believe that this is a banana. But it's not. This is an apple.
Yeah. Aren't they, darling? Well, this story that CNN posted about Lanny Davis being the source, not being the source, or story back in July that Michael Cohen had first-person knowledge of Trump's knowledge of the Trump Tower meeting between his son and campaign staff and the Russian lawyer before it occurred, since that has now been walked back by the fork-tongued Lanny Davis, much to the surprise and chagrin of Anderson Cooper when he did it on air. And Glenn Greenwald over at The Intercept who's, you know, no kind of conservative or no knee-jerk defender of President Trump. He's not an ally of the right. but he is a observer of bull jive when he hears it. Right. And it's worth noting, as he does, the Washington Post has since retracted the story they published back in July on this topic. CNN doggedly sticks with their story because they're sort of trick bagged by their tortured path of prevarication with respect to Lanny Davis and this story.
I find it to be, and obviously this is a high bar, one of the most humiliating and scandalous moments in the entire media behavior of the Trump-Russia saga. You know, I've been on your show to talk about a lot of these humiliating moments, and this might be one of the worst ones yet. Keep in mind that in addition to all the facts that you just said, what's so crucial about this is that after Lanny Davis went on CNN with Anderson Cooper, and to Anderson Cooper's shock, admitted that everything CNN had been breathlessly hyping is true, was actually false, namely that Michael Cohen was there when Trump learned about the Trump Tower meeting in advance, the Washington Post and the New York Post listened to that and they said, wait a minute, we independently confirmed CNN stories based on an anonymous source, and our anonymous source was Lanny Davis, who's now saying the whole thing is false. So they did what they had to do and what they should have done, which is they retracted the story. They outed their own source. They said our anonymous source is Lanny Davis, and we now retract it because he says it's false. CNN couldn't do that because they lied to the entire world. They said, as you just played, that they tried to get a hold of Lanny Davis and he refused to comment, when in fact, of course, Lanny Davis was also their source, and they don't want to admit that they lied to the world, so they can't retract the story. And they can't admit they lied, so they're just continuing to stick to what everybody knows is a lie, but not many people care because people think, a lot of people anyway, that it was done for the right political agenda.
Why can't they just eat crow? So, you know what? We made a mistake.
Because we're in the post-truth era in politics, apparently. And by the way, this is the same level of journalism, in quotation marks, that you're getting in this whole manufactured hype hysteria around Ron DeSantis's monkey things up comment, which will also talk to David Harsanyi about. He's senior editor at TheFederalist.com, author of the book First Freedom, A Ride Through America's Enduring History with the Gun, From the Revolution to Today. David, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Well, why don't we start with CNN and what Glenn Greenwald had to say in distinguishing CNN from other D.C. press corps outlets like The Post, both The Washington Post and The New York Post, and how they've treated this story since Lanny Davis has recanted. What's your reaction?
Well, I think everything you said is correct. I mean, I think CNN in particular has created a culture and embraced a prefabricated ending to this, you know, story already. So it's very hard for them to deviate from that, from those kinds of pieces. But also, and let's not forget, they have at least three, just off the top of my head, stories where they have said that multiple sources have given them something when we know that that's probably not the case. There's the story about Don Jr. meeting with the Russian, emailing with someone about the WikiLeaks stuff before it was released to the American people, and they had a source make the same mistake, two sources make the same mistake on an email. So, and then they also fired three journalists not that long ago, actually last year, where they only used one source for something that turned out to be untrue. I think if they held that standard now, they'd have to start firing everyone, including Carl Bernstein, which seems like not something they want to do.
But this is such an obvious betrayal. I mean, Lanny Davis lied for his own political purposes, and you know, I can't understand why they won't come forward and just say that they made a mistake. Because I will never trust them again. This is, you know, fool me once, shame on me, fool me twice.
Fool me six times.
Who trusts Lanny Davis for a story?
Right. Yeah, right.
I mean, that's the first thing that tells us not that they're not trustworthy.
But Journalism 101, you don't need one, so you have to confirm it with two sources, right?
The other source is Lanny Davis's secretary.
Yeah. That's right. Lanny Davis's secretary. And also, too, in exchange for being the source, they had to make a donation to Michael Cohen's GoFundMe page,
GoFundMe page.
As well. Continuing on this, Bruce Orr, closed door testimony the other day on the Hill. Of course, aspects of it leaked out, including yesterday the idea or the report that he named half a dozen top FBI officials who had knowledge of the dossier. One of them, according to Representative Radcliffe from Texas, is a signatory on the warrant application, suggesting that they were purposely committing a fraud on the FISA court to get the surveillance warrants. Does any of this matter anymore, or could Bruce Orr's testimony at some point in a public setting or the declassification of documents for the public consumption turn this Mueller investigation?
Well, let me take a quick step back and just say one more thing about CNN in regards to this. Yesterday we heard, I forget which congressman it was, talk about this. The FBI is now, they know, leaking things to places like CNN, and then CNN repackages those leaks as stories, and then the FBI uses those stories in their applications for investigations,
right,
buttressing them. That is just corrupt by the media. It's corrupt by the FBI. So
that was Mark Meadows who made that point. Made
Mark
that allegation.
Meadows, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know if it changes anything. I think for people who don't, who think that there was collusion, it doesn't matter that there are no facts to back that up. And they will never look at these, they will never say the FBI has acted poorly or politically. So I don't know what it changes, but for me, it just reinforces what I, as not a fan of Trump, it just reinforces to me that there were political motivations behind this dossier stuff, and that people pretty high up were doing something wrong. I'm not sure exactly how what the timeline is and how it happened, but obviously there's something wrong there.
Well, do you think we'd ever be able to find out who the FBI leakers are who gave those stories to CNN? Because they should be,
in addition to Andy McCabe, who's already conceded that he was a leaker. Yeah.
Right. Now, we know that as the Republicans pounce on these people one by one, and there are IG reports and there are investigations into their actions, we realize that by any standard, they were acting poorly. So we may find out. I mean, Donald Trump can go to the Justice Department and tell them to show us things if he really wanted to, which I don't understand why he doesn't do. But I don't know if we'll find out, but I hope we do, because I think this is going to end poorly for those people, many of those people.
Well, and I think it's an important juxtaposition, too. The evidence is important into supporting a contention, and the evidence continues to mount against the FBI and against the Department of Justice with respect to fair play, following their own protocols, following the law, former Obama administration officials potentially as well. And the evidence continues to be absent as it pertains to Russian collusion, as Lindsey Graham said this week. So I think that contrast is notable.
All right. I also wonder how. So CNN has made many mistakes, not just CNN. There have been so many corrections, and all those stories, of course, skew in one direction every time, even though they're supposedly innocent mistakes. I do wonder, what does this look like to many Americans if you don't have any of those stories out there? If the journalists had done their job correctly, if they hadn't moved forward with these big scoops that turned out to be untrue, it would look very different, because there would be essentially no evidence of this collusion theory at all, and not even, false alarms about collusion. There would be almost nothing.
Switching gears, I wanted to get your take on the media firestorm yesterday over Ron DeSantis saying, after complimenting his opponent in November for the governorship of Florida, that he outperformed his competitors in the Democrat primary, but Florida should continue on the path that Rick Scott has set, not go down the path of socialism that Andrew Gillum is promoting, and we shouldn't monkey things up in Florida. And this was taken, of course, to be a dog whistle by DeSantis.
Yeah, I mean, you can never really know someone's heart, right? But it seems to me that that term is not used in any sort of nefarious way there, and we need a list of words that we cannot use, because it's getting impossible not to say things that people feign outrage about, and it seems to me this is one of those cases, and obviously the media is going to make a big deal about it.
Yeah, but I mean, monkey this up. Have you ever heard somebody say that term?
Have I?
Yeah.
I think so. No?
Yeah, I mean, monkey around, monkey this up.
You should have said mess this up or...
Gary Hart's boat, monkey business.
Oh, that's right.
Get shock that. The monkey. You heard a lot of, you know...
Brass monkey, funky monkey.
It's just rather incredible. I mean, if you listen to what DeSantis said in context, which is what you're supposed to do, the idea that he was talking about Gillum's race... I mean, I agree with you, David. You can't know anybody's heart, but it's just so absurd on its face, at least with respect to the contextual evidence. He's talking about socialism. He's talking about economic policies. He's going to be talking about, for the next 75 days, Gillum's corporate tax rate increase and abolishing ICE and legalizing marijuana, all the other things Gillum wants to do right out of the Bernie Sanders playbook. That's what he's referencing. It's clearly not his race, but of course Gillum couldn't resist intimating that absolutely was right out of the Trump playbook. That was Gillum's response.
Oh, really? That's a shame, because I think he could have done well for himself not to say something like that. And listen, I would probably just come out and say, it's a word I use. It's obviously, I would never mean it to disparage someone and try to move on. But yeah, I mean, in context, especially when you first saw the headline, you thought he was speaking about,
right,
you know, is Gillum. So I don't know. I hate that kind of stuff, because you never really know, but it seems very unlikely to me.
I know. And it's also just sort of consistent with the general linguistic thuggery of the left.
Right. And what kind of dog whistle is that anyway, if someone wanted to use it? I don't even understand what the purpose of it would be. Is he telling people that his opponent is African American? Do they not know that? is he using something so obvious and trying to hide it from people? It doesn't really. I don't understand what the purpose would be of using that word, unless he's trying. I don't know what he's trying to. I mean, I don't even understand the case.
All right, that makes two of us. He's David Harsanyi, senior editor at TheFederalist.com. The book, First Freedom, A Ride Through America's Enduring History with the Gun, From the Revolution to Today. David, thanks for joining us as always. Appreciate it.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. And I love organizations and individuals who help other people reach their fullest potential. Nothing sadder than unrealized potential. I know, as somebody who is a living example of unrealized potential. It's very sad. And also, the times in which we live are very disturbing. Wesley Smith writing a National Review on the topic of euthanasia, as he does routinely, one of the individuals who best covers this topic, this ghoulish topic, that we've talked about on this show, both front end and back end, aborting children with Down syndrome. Celebrate that.
That's in Iceland too, right? That's
100%, right? For 6 years running. Obviously, the incidence is very high here too in this country. And then on euthanasia out of Belgium, which is sort of one of the leading cultures when it comes to the promotion of euthanasia. Legalized euthanasia in 2002, did Belgium. And of course, since that time, what happens? The creep, the expansion, the increase nearly tenfold from 235 in 2003, the first full year of legalization, to 2,309 in 2017. And in 2017, about 15% of the cases of euthanasia were of people whose deaths were not expected in the near future. Legalized killing of people who are suffering from depression and other mental illnesses. also physical disabilities, for example. Three children were killed under Belgian law in 2016 and 2017. 17-year-old kid suffering from muscular dystrophy, 9-year-old child who had a brain tumor, 11-year-old child suffering from cystic fibrosis. And become inconvenient. It's the humane thing is to put people down. That's how sick is the culture in certain respects. And, of course, this is being brought to the United States, starting on the left coast in places like California and Oregon. And so it's fun to be part of organizations and to see other organizations going the opposite direction, saying every human being has value, every human being has talent and ability, and and people who are called to try to help other individuals who may have different struggles fully blossom. And that's what our friends at the Eisenhower Center in Milwaukee, Wisconsin are doing. And for more on this topic, we're pleased to be joined by the development director for the Eisenhower Center in Milwaukee. He is David Orden. David, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Dan and Amy. Thank you for having me on. That was a beautiful introduction and really well said.
Thank you very much. And we came to know about the Eisenhower Center. We're very familiar with organizations like yours in Chicago. We've talked about before a lot of good organizations that serve persons with developmental disabilities. But you sent us some packages of dog treats.
Oh, yes, you did.
Yeah, that's the shortcut to our hearts, of course. So we have Seguin Services in Cicero. They run a car wash with their clients and residents. An organization I'm affiliated with, Envision Unlimited, also works with employers like Home Depot to place people with disabilities to do various jobs and try and fully integrate people as much as they can in the community. One of the things that you're doing, though, which is really cool, is you've got a group of your clients who have developed a business creating dog treats. And I can tell you now, Amy's dog is probably a bad taste tester because...
Oh, no, we are already down a bag.
Well, I know.
But chowed down the whole bag.
But Bunky's like a billy goat. He'll eat anything. She'll eat anything.
No, she's finicky, just like Hayek. That's
Hayek
one thing
has a sharp palate.
Oh, that's right.
Gourmet only. And he loved the Ike Bites Dog Treats, IkeBitesDogTreats.com. So just tell us a little bit about the Eisenhower Center and this specific venture you've gone on with your clients.
Sure. Well, you know, you mentioned euthanasia, and I don't want to go too far down that road, but there is a soft euthanasia of isolation. And Eisenhower Center and places like this, you know, all over the country started, you know, maybe 50 years ago with an idea that you didn't have to have a child with disabilities set aside in a corner room or in the attic and left alone, that they could be in a sheltered environment, they could work, they could learn skills. And that's really the genesis of places like Eisenhower Center and what we're trying to do. So basically, Ike Bites is an idea that we felt two things. One, you never know how the economy is going to go, so we wanted to have a product that we could make, that we could sell, that we could kind of control our own destiny. And also, you're mentioning kind of problems from the left. Unfortunately, it comes from the left. There is a whole alphabet and number soup of regulations out there that they are trying to close places like Eisenhower Center down all over the country. And so we thought, well, let's get something that we can grow, we can build, we can become economically sustainable for the long term, and free ourselves from having to worry about all those regulations and all the economic uncertainty. So that's, in a nutshell, that's what we're talking about. And our clients have a place to be, somewhere to go. Their parents know they're taken care of. They learn skills. They learn how to work on a team, follow directions, all these good things. And if we can find them a job in the community, that's even better.
So dog treats are part of a $20 billion pet food industry. I mean, there's potential for sales and profits. How many people do you employ, and then you do help them, you know, leave your company and obtain other jobs, right? Just tell us how you do that.
Yeah, so we have about 90 clients at any one time. They come, you know, after they after school, after they age out of special education programs, so anywhere from 25 up to 85, really.
Wow.
And we do, yes, have employment training. We try to get people jobs, but the reason why we exist and the reason we were set up was really for people that cannot or do not want to work out in the community. They have really severe challenges. Most of our people are in wheelchairs. A lot of our people need help, you know, eating or using the bathroom, real basic stuff. So when you try to place someone in the community, it's very hard to ask a business person to hire more than a few, but who's going to take the person to lunch? Who's going to make sure they're chewing their food? Who's going to take them to the bathroom? So we are a safety net for really the most vulnerable people out there.
And I like on the website, again, the website is IkeBitesDogTreats.com if you want to pick up some dog treats for your pooch at home. But I like that you profile the clients that are working and the different jobs they do and also the challenges they have. So I'm looking at the website now, and you you have a profile at the top of Gino, who's your master networker with Down syndrome. To humanize this general concept, tell us about Gino and the experience with Gino and his experience working in this endeavor.
Sure. So Gino is great. And if you're ever up here and want to visit, bring your business card, because the first thing he'll do is he's going to ask you what you're doing here and where's your business card. So he's wonderful. And he, as you see, it says we have, you know, on task, total concentration. He loves to work. He loves to greet people. And at the same time, he's really vulnerable out there. So we have a place where he can learn to bake, learn to package, earn a paycheck, and he's got the pride of being part of something big. So Gino is great. They're all great, really. We have a wonderful group of people. And I have to say, if anybody hates their job, take a walk through our place, and you will have a different view of life.
What is it? What's their, I mean, are they just so happy to work there? What's their, you know, coming to work every day must be a joy.
Sure. I mean, that's the whole thing. Everybody, almost everybody, wants to work. And a lot of these our guys and girls here, so their parents may not have, they have a life too. They may not have a place for them to go. So really they come to us a lot of times after they've tried everything. And a lot of the state bureaucracies don't work in terms of finding more than a handful of jobs. And there's maybe 500,000 people in this situation across the country, and certainly tens of thousands in Wisconsin, I'm sure more in Illinois. So when they come here, they know that they're protected. We have education. We have programs. They have activities. They have we have a work, as you mentioned before, work, you know, about getting people out to work. There's a work readiness program where they can learn social skills and interviewing skills. So they come here, and this is their place. This is their job. We used to call it job security, that you could have a place to go where you know you'd be for a while, and people would know and care about you, and you could produce something well and again gain the pride of earning a paycheck.
So how long has the gourmet dog treats business, if you will, been up and running, and how's it going?
Sure. So we started about 2013. Again, it was sort of in the middle of the recession, and we really needed to find a way to get some independence. So we started selling them in our lobby. I think the first month we sold $25. That was a big day. And now we are in more than 120 groomers, kennels, pet stores, and other places around the country. We are baking up a storm. We're working with other dog treat companies and private label. We got a partnership with someone who made a Shark Tank deal earlier this year.
Oh, really?
And so we're really on the verge of something that this dream could happen. So it's exciting to watch. Every time we grow, we get to employ more people back in the bakery. And it's growing, and I do think it could be a model for other places. And you know what? Someday I'm hoping that your dogs will be the spokespeople.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe Hayek. Hayek is very camera friendly. Bunky, not
Bunky's
so much.
Bunky's extremely photogenic for an English bulldog, I have to tell you.
Well,
she
there you go.
Loves
we can
your
be
treats. She does not like. She again. She's very finicky, and she loved him.
That's like saying someone is very photogenic for an offensive lineman. I mean, this Hayek is. I mean, Hayek
he's
is
more
a,
refined.
He's a matinee idol. So you're definitely going to want Hayek, David. All right.
All right. Well, just so you know, the treats are, they're handmade. They're wholesome products.
Oh, good.
All that good stuff. Human grade. We've been tested for what they call a crude analysis. All that good stuff. So you could even share the treats with Hayek, Dan.
I have.
Yes, they smell so good. I want to eat them. Is that bad?
You are allowed. No, you are allowed, and in fact, I require it.
I like the peanut butter dog treats, and so does Hayek. He is David Orton. He's the development director for the Eisenhower Center in Milwaukee. Check out the website, this business they've started, Great Dog Treats. IkeBitesDogTreats.com is the website. David, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Dan and Amy. Have a great day.
You too. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer. On AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy, it's time for animal stories Uncle Dan and a little Amy. Very good.
Wow, and there it is.
I'll combine it with Karnak. Jimbo the dog, shirtless men, and a bottle of lubricant. What is a dog sitting service I'll never use? Dog owner in Colorado claims that when he used a dog sitting service to care for his dog while he was away, he came home to find shirtless men, a bottle of lubricant, and a camera in his living room.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, Jimbo, get over here, you little minx. I got a treat for you.
Please don't tell me they touched the dog. Please. Please.
That must have been quite a shock. Two shirtless men were sitting on his living room couch. When he asked them to leave, he noticed there was an open bottle of personal lubricant and a camcorder on the end table. And apparently the year is 1983. Camcorder. Jimbo, Keller's dog, was found inside a locked bedroom where he was sitting in his own urine.
Oh, see, now it's not funny anymore. Poor Poochie.
Keller.
Did they ever let it out or walk it? Or maybe we're glad they didn't.
I don't want to think about what they were doing with Jimbo.
Leave Jimbo alone.
The owner, Jimbo's owner, Keller, said it's pretty self-explanatory what was going on. There was also what I can only assume are bodily fluids on the couch.
Oh!
Jimbo, I'm so sorry.
What was the name of the pet sitting service, Dan?
Wag.
No, it wasn't. Was it really?
Yep.
Did they have any Yelp reviews?
Wait, we're not done.
Oh, no.
The dog sitter is actually a woman.
Oh.
The unidentified dog sitter who was showering in his home when Keller returned home.
Oh, my God.
While the shirtless men were on the couch. She told a local news station she didn't have knowledge of bodily fluids on the couch and that the lubricant was used to remove her keys, which were stuck in her car.
That is the
worst. Oh, Jimbo.
Oh, that's funky.
Keller said this.
That's Bunky angry.
That's Bunky reacting to the lubricant bottle being opened.
Okay. No, wait, is there any bestiality charges here?
The owner said the scene was, quote, just a total mess, and I can only imagine what poor Jimbo saw in there.
Does Jimbo need counseling?
Poor Jimbo will never be the same, scarred for life. The dog sitter, who previously had a 4.96 at a 5-star rating.
Yeah.
Had amassed a total of 305 dog walks and sittings.
Sure,
passed all the background checks, the company said. Yeah. That's what they said about that doctor at Michigan State, too.
Yeah. Oh my God. Too soon.
All right. Thoughts after and prayers for Jimbo.
Hope he can recover.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
See Sheriff David Clark and James O'Keefe at Freedom Summit 2018. Tickets on sale now at freedomsummitchicago.com.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, and it's football season. You get the Wheaton Murrinville South kid breaking the state record for field goals with eight.
Eight kicks.
Yeah, eight field goals.
Yeah, right. He's shot from 40. Shot. Kicked from 48 yards, 44, 24, and he broke a school record. That's huge.
Yeah. It's state record.
State record.
Yeah, that's good. You got Purdue and Northwestern tonight.
Yeah,
kicking off Big Ten season. Then
is that game at?
It's in Evanston.
Yeah,
isn't it?
No, in Lafayette.
Oh, it's in West Lafayette. Yeah. Whatever, who cares?
It's your alma mater. You don't care, but I care about my Iowa Hawkeyes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they open up Saturday.
Yeah, 2:30 at Iowa, and they play none other than Northern Illinois University.
And you can hear the Huskies defeat the Hawkeyes starting at 2:30 on Saturday on these airwaves. And for more of a preview of that game and another upset of the 3 yards in a cloud of dust Iowa Hawkeyes offense, we're pleased to be joined by Sean Fraser, Associated VP and Director of Athletics at NIU. Sean, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you very much, guys. How you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
And I'm doing fantastic.
All right. So what's going to happen on Saturday when NIU travels to play the Hawkeyes? You've got a Hawkeye here. You got a lot of Iowa alums in Chicago that are insufferable. And I'd like to see Iowa defeated.
You know, I'm going to avoid that trap. I'm just going to say that I've been listening to you, Amy. I got you. I hear the passion.
Yeah.
I'm good with that.
I've got a Herky the Hawkeye symbol in my hand right now as we're doing this.
Pathetic.
No, the boys are ready. We're fired up. You know, this was my first away game when I came to NIU, and we were fortunate to pull out a victory in 2013. And, you know, it's going to be a battle when these two teams come together. You know, they're very physical. They're historic. They got tradition base, and they're going to be well coached. And we have some great kids on both sides, so it's going to be one heck of a game.
Tell us about your quarterback. Tell us about your team. Who are the stars unsung heroes?
Well, they're all stars, Amy. You have to understand that from my perspective. They're all stars. We have some folks, you know, they've gotten some notoriety. Sutton Smith, our defensive end. You know, he's obviously an All-American, you know, he's done a great job last year. But he'll be the first one to tell you that that happened last year, and he's got to prove himself this year. Sharping, too, on our offensive line, you know, plays tackle for us, a great human being, unbelievable off and on the field. He'll do a fantastic job as well. Again, second-team All-American. And, you know, again, you know, those guys are symptomatic of what we do overall, offense, defense, special teams. All the young men on the team are well-prepared. They're passionate about NIU and NIU football. And they're going to bring their A game on Saturday. There's no question.
All right. You got Ryan Graham. He's a quarterback from Wheaton Warrenville South. Let's talk about kids from Wheaton because that's what I care about. Tell me about Ryan Graham.
Ryan Graham's, again, I've said it before, I'll say it again, you know, we've got kids that are passionate, really passionate about playing football and getting a great education. And Ryan, he exemplifies that. So he's going to contribute, he has contributed, and we're excited. We're excited about our offense, and quite frankly, we're excited about all phases of our game.
All right, when are you guys going to get back and get a rematch with Florida State in a BCS bowl game?
Well, you know, BCS is no longer.
It's then the playoffs. Old school.
You know, we play Florida State this year. We go down to Florida State, so we'll have a rematch of Florida State. Obviously, it's a regular season game. We're excited about that. We got a real tough schedule, and, you know, that's going to be a war down there. There's no question about it.
Oh, that's fun
to
get a Florida State game. Yeah,
yeah,
in Tallahassee.
Huge.
That'll be fun.
And then when you go to bigger schools that you play, then they give you some cash, right, at the door so that you can grow your program. Or do we not talk about this?
They hand out bags of cash when you show up to play Florida State.
Or when you go to Iowa, when you play bigger schools, it helps your program, correct?
Yeah, you know, those guarantee games, when they don't come to Husky Stadium, so a good example is that we've got Utah coming to our place this year. That's a home and home. We go back to them. So those are different financial arrangements. But when we have one-offs, like, you know, Iowa or Florida State, yeah, there's a compensation component to get a brand like NIU. So, yeah, I don't know about bags of cash.
I didn't mean that, but I mean the Hawkeyes have to shell out some money because they, you know, share the profits at the door.
Yeah,
it's only fair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree. I like your logic, and we do that. Yes, absolutely.
So, so Sean, Amy Jacobson is the proud parent of a high school freshman at Amundsen.
It's Amundsen High School.
I don't know. Nobody's ever heard of it. But anyway, he's a freshman in high school in Chicago, and he's like 6'10", 450 pounds. He's starting on varsity as a freshman. I'm probably going to sign him to represent him. We may have him skip college and go right to the pros. But if he goes to college, you may want to get in on this action.
Well, when you just said 6'10", 400 pounds, yeah, there's probably going to be a few people that's coming looking for his services. There's no question about that.
No, he's got a size 15 shoe. He's not done growing. His proper measurements are 6'3 and a half, 200 pounds.
But
so
he's a freshman.
Oh, well, he's still got room to grow.
Yeah, that's a nice size.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a very nice size, and that growth will definitely put him into a certain percentile of recruitment. There's no question about that. I'm precluded to doing any of that recruitment from NCAA bylaws, but I will say this. I'm quite sure there'll be interest.
Yeah.
Do you recruit heavily from the Chicago area?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. You need to look at our roster. Yes, we do. We have significant amount of our Chicagoland boys on the team. We do very well in the state. We're represented big time. And so when we wave the flag, of the state flag of Illinois, we are the state flag, and we are the state of Illinois. There's no question about that.
At least some Illinois university is keeping local talent at home. Now, just with respect to Amy's son, the freshman, I just kind of want to lay out some grounds. I'm not officially representing it, but I'm just saying in my perspective, and I'll confer with my client. And that is, you know, we're not so hep to a lot of academic rigor. We really want to focus on football. We want the payday. All right, so this needs to be a feeder to the pros in, you know, in a couple of years at the outside.
Well, I'm going to tell you up front, you know, our GPAs overall from the campus, you know, for all of our sports is a 3.2 overall. So, you know, we have 14 out of 17 teams in our department with a 3.0 or better. So academics are going to be a part of this process.
Yeah,
we're not going to be able to escape that. I'm just going to give you a heads up to that.
All right. We'll have to negotiate that. Yeah.
So who else is on your schedule? Besides Iowa, Utah, Florida State, who else are you playing?
We also play BYU. We have a home-and-home series with Brigham Young. So they come to we go to their place. They come back the following year. So our non-conference, if you look at our non-conference schedule, if it's not the toughest, it's one of the toughest in the country.
Oh, yeah.
So we have that this year. And then we go into our MAC schedule right after that, which is, again, on the MAC West side, we're always competitive, you know, with the likes of, you know, Toledo, Miami of Ohio. You know, we have a very competitive schedule this year. There's no question about it.
Yeah, he produced a lot of great football players, that names that people know around Chicago, really around the nation, too, a number of pros as well. And it's good to hear the performance of the student athletes at NIU. Both my parents went to NIU.
Oh, well, damn.
So, there you go.
Yeah, so very, very happy to hear that. And Sean Frazier, good luck on Saturday. Beat Iowa, please, so we can end Iowa's season early. Sean Frazier, Associate Vice President, Director of Athletics at NIU. The game, 2:30 Saturday on these airwaves, AM 560. Sean, thanks for joining us. Have a great season.
Yeah, you too. Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it.
Go Hawkeyes. Just kidding. Go Huskies. And also, yeah, we are home of the Huskies. So every game, whether away or home, you can hear right here on AM 560 The Answer. And Sean joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Morning Answer.
On AM 560 The Answer.
Dan and Amy with Senator John McCain's funeral service today. I just wanted to remind people, as we did upon the news of his death over the weekend on the Monday show, how he was actually treated by the left when he dared to run against Barack Obama, the left that's embracing him now, the left that he embraced. And another example, in addition to the racial demagoguery that was used against him, when he ran for president against Obama. A lot of flacks in Hollywood for Obama in 08, like Ben Affleck.
I know, you said flacks and a flacks.
Emphasis
He's a
on,
flack in front of flack.
Emphasis on flack, right. Ben Affleck on Bill Maher's show at the time.
You know what's interesting about this whole idea of this intolerance and this hate and this terrorism thing? I noticed from the debate the other day, wasn't the debate actually, it was this conversation he had. There was this woman who said to McCain, Obama is an Arab.
Right.
And he said, no, ma'am, he's not an Arab. I thought, oh, this is wonderful. He's repudiating this kind of intolerance and hatred. He said, no, he's not an Arab. He's a good man.
Right. He said he's a decent citizen.
Yeah. Hold on. What if I said to you, what if somebody said, I heard he's a Jew, and I said, no, he's not a Jew. He's all right.
Right.
That's not what McCain said. That's not how he said it. He corrected the woman. Then he went on to give his impression of Obama, two separate trains of thought. Then it was, Barack Obama's a good man. I just disagree with him on policy. And Ben Affleck disingenuously combined the two because he's a scumbag. And that's how the left treats those. And unfortunately, McCain spent much of his political career trying to sidle up and win approval from that side. He shouldn't have. That was a mistake. And it's a lesson for those who think that McCain had the model right.
Yesterday, 15,000 people waited in, three-digit heat. It was 104 degrees to say their goodbyes. Today, there's a service. Former Vice President Joe Biden's going to be speaking at the service. And you said something to me during the commercial break. You're like, oh, wasn't Joe Biden supposed to find a cure for cancer? He was tasked with that, remember?
President Obama gave
President
him
Obama.
That. Yeah, right. So they must be still a work in progress. Maybe he'll have it solved by the time he runs for president in 2020.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.